They built a few wooden ships, even.
So how did the women react to being in that kind of job situation? Do you remember any of the kinds of conversations or attitudes? Or
not really. I don't remember any conversations or anything. Although it seems to me they did appear a little nervous to begin with. You know, as well, Jesus, just how are these guys going to accept this?
Yeah.
And working on a ship wasn't the easiest thing. They're working at a bit of a height, particularly in the skeleton, when they're just putting up the framework. There were ladders and there were stagings, and they were very careful about how they got to where they had to work. Of course, so were some of the men. Whereas others didn't pay any attention at all. They walked across the beams, just paid no attention to them.
Yeah, I would find it very difficult. It would take me a while.
Well, it took them in. In fact, there are some people that never do get accustomed to it.
So, were the majority of women unskilled workers, though?
Yes. Helpers.
And how did the women get involved in the union? Did the union make a conscious effort to reach out to them?
Oh, they were signed up.
Yeah.
They were another worker and they had to be signed.
Was there any sort of specific attempt to reach the women other than signing them up in terms of going, well, here's this whole new layer with the union and we have to deal with it?
No, I don't really think so.
So how did women become shop stewards? Just like coming
like anybody else. Elected by the group you were working with. See, the shop stewards were never appointed. They were elected. If you were a riveter and you worked in a certain section, well, that group elected the shop steward of that riveter. It was the same with the caulkers, the same with the welders. Each group had their own shop stewards.
Was there an industrial union by the time the women came? Was it still small?
Yes, I think it was, yes. It had already been set up as the Shipyard and General Workers Union. Originally, it was a Boilermakers Union. And they split the Boilermakers trade into a number of different trades. The riveter, the caulker, the burner, the welder, plater, and so on. These were all, the Boilermakers were supposed to do all of these jobs. Well, obviously, they couldn't train them to do all of these jobs. So it was split up. I think there was only two or three boilermakers working in the shipyard in Prince Rupert.
So when you say it was split up, does that mean that there are also different unions for that initially?
No, that's the Shipyard and General Workers Union.
Right.
But the boilermakers' trade was split into a number of trades.
Right.
I guess that's the way you'd explain it. There were aspects of the boilermakers, but they became trades in general.
So, was there a lot of militancy within the
Quite a bit,
yard?
Yes.
And
it's almost a constant wobble in the yard.
Can you, wobble, that's like a wildcat.
Not a wildcat strike, yes.
Yeah, because there was a no strike.
We never signed it.
So, and the women participated in that?
Oh, yes.
Quite interesting to think of a whole layer of people who must have gone through some pretty incredible changes in the way they saw themselves. Where did those women come from? Were they women from Rupert who mostly worked in the yards, or were they from
Yes, they all were. Their husbands worked in the yard.
Many of
them? Are their fathers, and there were the daughters. Yeah, they were all from around. I don't think anyone were brought in.
So in a sense, they were coming into a tradition that had already been established and that they'd grown up with?
Yeah.
Or were married?
That's right. It was part of the family.
Were there any sort of changes in the community when this number of women began to work?
No, I don't think. Outside of what I mentioned around the hotel and that, outside of that, I don't think there was any, no.
Were there general changes in attitudes towards women at all?
Well, it was pretty hard to tell. See, Rupert was such a turmoil. There's an army base, for the Canadian Army. It was an army base for the American Army. There was also a concentration of workers and a concentration of fishermen. So there were some terrific conflicts. Saturday night was just a series of battles from one corner to the next.
So what did these women do with their kids? Did people talk about that at all?
No, I don't think the question ever arose. I can't remember it ever arising anyway.
And did the union ever talk about issues like maternity leave or?
No.
No.
No, these issues never came up.
How about equal pay and equal work?
They got equal pay.
And how did people see doing that? Was it an attempt to protect the wage levels that they
had? Well, I think it was recognized that if they didn't get their right wages, the same wages as the man was getting, and it was going to undercut the man's wages. Well, this, I'm sure, was generally recognized.
Right.
In fact, they insisted that the company did make an attempt.
Oh, can you describe?
Kind of a half-hearted attempt, mind you.
How did they do that?
They just weren't paying the wage.
Right.
And that was one of the causes of one of the wobbles.
People just down their tools.
Down their tools. Now, go over and get this thing straightened out.
Right.
So it was straightened out. That was all there was to it. There's never any more trouble around it.
And they tried to use the women?
Yeah.
How did the women react to that? They were really angry, or?
Well, I think they were kind of sitting by watching to see what was happening. There weren't too many women in the yard at the time. It was nipped right in the bud as soon as they raised the question, it was stopped.
Do women come to union meetings and that kind of
thing? Yes, not too many of them probably. There was always women at the meetings.
Because one of the things that would strike me is that if the women came in and sort of saw themselves doing that kind of work mostly for the duration of the war, then they might be less likely to actually participate within the union.
Yeah, well, I think there was that understanding amongst women that this was a wartime job, and as soon as the war was over, it would be finished.
Right.
In fact, most of the men in the yard in Prince Rupert knew that. That when the war was over, we had no jobs either.
What happened when the war ended? When did they begin to lay off women, around 1943 or something?
About 46.
46.
Yeah. No, it must have been latter part of 45. I got laid off in 46, in February, which is pretty early.
Yeah.
And I had a fair amount of seniority.
Yeah.
So it must have started right after the end of the war. I think they finished the ships that they were building, and no more orders, so...
Did they lay off the women first?
I can't really remember. They probably laid them off in the terms of seniority.
Yeah.
And they were the last hired. Well, not exactly. They were lots hired before, after them. And, of course, they would be laid off after them.
Was there a lot of kind of propaganda about women working at that time, like newspaper articles or?
Well, yeah, there was a certain amount.
Rosie,
you remember that Rosie the Riveter? There's a lot of this sort of nonsense going around.
Yeah.
I don't think it affected anybody.
Right.
Not there anyway. It may have had an effect, say, around Boeing's or places like that. It certainly didn't affect the Rupert Yard. See, that was only a small yard in Rupert. That was the only two-way yard on the coast.
What's a two-way yard?
You could build two ships at a time.
Oh.
See, there was two ways, and you always built your ships on the way so they could slide down.
Yeah.
So there's only two in Rupert.
Right. So how many workers were there around during the war?
Oh, maybe close to 2,000 one time.
Thinking how many of those would be women? Do you remember?
Yes, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. A few hundred or?
Yes, we're running into the hundreds, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some pretty heavy political battles in the shipyard in general, both the union and the boilermakers. Were the women pretty integrated into those debates?
I think those major battles were pretty well over by the time the women came in. So they centered around the no-strike pledge. It's a major fight. And that had been settled before the women came in.
Right. What about the split with the CCL?
Oh, we never split with the CCL.
That local number?
No. I don't think the Vancouver ran split with the CLC. Well, the CLC at that time, not the CCL.
Weren't they put under jurisdiction?
You may be right at the very end of the war when there became so few members, particularly in Victoria. See, there were several yards in Victoria, small yards, and some of them may have been put in their receivership. But by that time, I had left the shipyard and gone back to the mines.
You had a woman killed?
Yeah, I think it was a second. No, I guess she only had her back broken. She wasn't killed. But she stepped off the deck onto a staging. And the staging planks have a give to them, a spring. And it was her first day in the yard. And I guess this spring scared her in the height. And she just went right over the end.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
She was a crippled the rest of her life. Paralyzed from the waist down, I believe.
Wow. So, did people sort of get trained when they came into the yards at all?
Well, the training was in the yard.
The training was
in. So they were on the job now. You begin to learn.
Yeah.
This is the same with the men. They came into the yard. You start at the bottom and you start working up.
So it would be a real test of people's ability.
That's right. Well, I imagine there was a lot that came in that couldn't take it and left. Particularly when they came in on a ship that was just about finished and found themselves working up on the upper deck, on the superstructure. And all this vast open space below them.
Were the women into the war effort? Did they?
Oh, yes. In fact, many of them in the shipyard were, particularly the Stalinist. They supported the victory bonds and whatnot. I remember this was after 1941 when the Soviet Union entered the war.
Right.
But then the war effort was a major thing. Work conditions just went to hell as far as they were concerned.
People were working piece work.
Oh, yes. Well, no. Outside of the riveters. I don't think there was any piece work in the shipyard. The riveters worked piece work. I don't think anybody else did. The riveter was used actually to drive the whole shipyard. That's what actually happened. He was on piecework, he was in a hurry. So they had to get these plates on for him to move on. The staging riggers had to get in there and get his staging ready.
Sort of like the lead man, almost.
Yeah, well, he was the guy that set the pace.
Right.
But he was getting paid for it, the rest weren't.
They were just getting on and waging.
Yeah.
Was peace work defeated at all?
No. It's a funny thing that the peace rate and the wage itself was the same wage, the same peace rate that existed during the First World War.
That's the yards that
composed? Well, partly, and then of course there was a ban on wages. The War Labor Board said you must not raise wages. And what did the company say? Yes, we'd like to raise those wages. But here's the War Labor Board says no. And it would be against the law for us to raise wages.
Do you have any other, are there any other sort of major areas in your experience that you can think of where the question of women was central in the labor movement?
No, I can't think of anything else.
In the 30s, were there very many women involved in the labor
movement? No. Not that I know of. See, my work during the 30s was primarily organizing. See, the mines weren't organized. By the 30s, the International Union of Mine Builders Motor Workers had been smashed. So it was a big job then of trying to reorganize it again. And it actually wasn't reorganized until 1943, when it became legalized. There were several unions. There was the Bridge River Miners Union, out here. I guess there was a miners' union up in the Caribou. I think Stewart was organized, the Premier Mine Stewart. There were several attempts to organize both Trail and Kimberley, but they failed. There were some major battles around that.
And the women's auxiliaries existed in those towns?
They weren't too prevalent in Bridge River, no. No.
When you'd go in and organize, would you also try and get someone to organize the
women into an auxiliary? No. No. There's enough of a problem trying to get the men organized. They had a company doctor, he examined you once a year. And most of the mines had an MSA or some sort of a medical plan.
Would they work with the community? So that, for example, women having kids and that kind of
thing? Well, yes, the doctor would deliver the children, yeah. Of course, you had a physical exam every year. Bend down and touch your toes, and if your heart was still beating, you were okay to go to work for another year.
But there was no attempt to deal with industrial diseases or the conditions or anything?
They avoided it as much as possible.
Yes.
Oh, yes. They knew about silicosis from the Roman days. They knew about it. Mm-hmm. The only person who didn't know about it was the miner that was working in it, that was catching it. Now, we used to refer to it as miner's consumption. It wasn't, that had nothing to do with consumption, really. Sure. Well, it's worse than that. The dust gets in there and it can't get out.
Yeah.
And you have a chemical reaction. It sets up a scar tissue. It covers over the air sacs. So there's no exchange of gases from the lungs to the blood and from the blood back to the lungs again. That's what causes the shortness of breath.
Right.
But they knew this. The companies knew it. The medical association knew it. It's only the workers that didn't know it. The same thing is happening with asbestosis. They're covering it up.
Yeah, I was hearing this thing on the CBC about how they've developed a new way of testing for silicosis and asbestosis, which finally differentiates the disease from other forms of lung diseases, which you can get from on, but that the companies and the vast majority of people in the medical profession weren't using any kind of testing devices which could differentiate. So that meant that miners could use the evidence for compensation, because the company could always say, well, you know, you just take these.
My doctor filed for compensation for silicosis in 1968. I wasn't able to establish a pension until 1975. Yeah. So all they do is they take an x-ray. And they say, oh, sure, you're short of breath. We know there's something wrong, but it sure isn't silicosis. So, how do you argue with it? And this is what they can be doing.